You're listening to The Taste Masters with your hosts, David and Wyatt.
All right, guys, welcome. Today we have our regular guests on, Matt and Elizabeth, to talk about ciders, dessert ciders specifically. Just regular guests. They're not special. They're just regular. Now they're regulars. This is their fifth episode with them.
Five Timers Club.
They're regular now. They're not special anymore.
You guys have been on for five times.
I want to be special.
You have a special mustache.
Okay, I can take that.
Yeah.
To me, you're special, Matt.
I can do that.
Still have a man crush on you. It's fine. My cider, bro.
I haven't killed that yet.
No, you haven't. But today, we're going to do another episode with dessert ciders, dessert and iced ciders. And you guys have brought like 15 ciders for us today, and we are tickled.
It's a big lineup. But yeah. I mean, these are going to be far smaller pours, little sippers, and we've got a lot of things to get to, but there's a variety of things here, and everything's a little bit different.
So tell us, for those who don't know, what's a dessert cider or an ice cider? What the hell does that mean?
So ice ciders are like ice wines, which ice wines got their start in Germany and Austria, and it all started when they had a heavy, hard freeze come in before the grapes had been harvested. And what do you do with them? Well, they just pressed the grapes anyway, frozen. And by freezing, you could freeze the grapes and then press them, or press the grapes and then freeze the juice. Either way, it freezes the water and separates it from the fruit syrup.
Okay.
Once you take apple juice, freeze it, the water freezes off and you're left with a concentrate.
Yeah.
But it's naturally concentrated, you know, just on the vine like that. So they pressed them, and you're concentrating all that sugar into a smaller volume. So it ferments further to higher ABV, and they typically end up being sweeter because alcohol will kill the yeast. So more sugar to start with gets it to a higher ABV. There's still sugar remaining, but the yeast can't survive in that that environment with the alcohol that high. So it kills the yeast off, but you get a lot of remaining sugar, residual
Interesting.
Sugar.
Interesting.
So
that's ice wine or ice vine in Germany. Thankfully, that's really similar to English.
Thank God, because
I know, right?
My German is not there.
So you carry that over to the Germans that immigrated to North America. Ice wine became big in North America in Ontario and Quebec.
Okay.
Canada has a rich ice wine history, and somewhere it gets a little fuzzy. 1960s, 1970s, 1980s. Someone decided to take the ice wine concept and translate it to cider and start making ice cider.
So this is relatively new then.
It's relatively new. It got its start in Canada.
Canadians.
I know.
Stick to donuts.
Maple syrup. Moose.
Hockey.
Hacky.
And what we've got in front of us today is, it's a kind of a wide variety of things. I brought four ice ciders for us to try. I've got two or three Pomots.
What's a Pomot?
So a Pomot, and we can get into this a little bit more. It's a blend of apple brandy and either apple juice or apple cider, hard cider.
Gotcha.
That sounds great.
Isn't that what Calvados is? Apple cider?
Yep.
Calvados is apple
brandy.
Brandy.
From a specific, we'll get into that a little bit. We can talk about some of that.
Hell yeah.
The first one we're going to start off with, though, it's more of a dessert cider. So dessert ciders, one of the easiest way to spot them when you're shopping, and we don't have any of these in Utah yet. I'm sorry. We're working on it. But one of the ways to spot these things is they come in 375 mil bottles, generally very slender, very tall. A 375 of this will last you quite a while because you're only pouring.
It's like very, very
you
sweet.
Pour like an ounce and a half and just kind of sip on it. It's more of an aperitif or a digestif.
Gotcha.
The first one that we're going to pour, though, is from Liberty Cider Works.
Oh, we're familiar with
Liberty. You guys are fans.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is their Manchurian Crab Apple. So this is a single varietal, and it's made from nothing but Manchurian Crab Apple. This one clocks in at 12.5%.
Oh, get wrecked.
The Manchurian crab apples are roughly the size of a cherry.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you can imagine how many you need to press to get the juice.
Yeah.
At least a couple dozen.
This isn't an iced cider, though.
No, this one is not an
iced cider.
Dessert cider,
right?
Dessert cider, though.
I mean, I'll let you guys decide. That's maybe a little bit of a healthy pour. But it's a
healthy pour.
Oh. Give me the
half
the
of that.
Less healthy pour.
Less healthy pour.
The slender pour.
So, Matt and Elizabeth, why you guys are here, I want to know. You guys have been to Liberty, right? You guys have been... You
that's
guys have been
car.
To yes. the cidery?
We have been to Liberty. It's up in Spokane, Washington.
Right.
Yep.
And it's pretty cool. Is it pretty big? I'm happy.
They're a very small, craft cidery.
Gotcha. Cool.
It's interesting that it's made of crab apples. I grew up with like crab apples growing in our
small, right?
yard. Yeah, super yeah. small.
Like you said,
and
cherries.
It was like, I remember as a kid like wanting to eat them, and my dad's like, no, don't eat those. Those are crab apples. Don't eat those.
I thought it was like, crap apples growing up. I'm not going to lie. Crap apples. And it made sense. Yeah. Like, don't eat them. And then you ate them, you're like, eh.
My grandma would make jam out of them. And that was fucking good.
My grandmother made crab apple jelly. We had a crab apple tree in our front yard.
Yeah. And that was all they were good for, I thought, was making jam.
We used them for one thing. And we would take them, and you could draw on the sidewalk with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ones we had were red fleshed on the inside.
Yeah.
And it would stain my parents. Oh, God, my dad hated it. It stained the sidewalk. It'd take the whole season before it washed off.
Oh, damn.
And then the thing I remember about it most, though, is the fall when the crab apples still on the tree would effectively start to ferment. Just hanging there on the tree. The birds would eat them. The birds would get drunk and fly into our front window.
No way.
Every autumn, we always had birds crashing in the front window by the crab apple tree.
No way.
Nice. We had birds crashing into the window. It wasn't like super often, but it was like, you know, a couple times a year. And I wasn't putting two and two together that, hey, maybe they're getting hammered off of fermented crab apples.
But now you know.
We would always play we called it like tag, but we would always just like throw them at each other and just ruin clothes. Ruin clothes.
And get welts.
Oh,
you're talking about throwing
welts.
Birds at each other.
Like, throwing dead birds.
Drunk the dead birds.
No, throw crab apples.
You had me confused for a second.
Yeah.
So this one's going to be semi-sweet. It's not quite all the way to the sweet end of the spectrum.
Wow, that's sweet. Huh. More, I mean, that's, on the nose, I get more... More apple.
Yeah,
more
it's ABV. Surprisingly apple-y.
It's very vegetal to me and kind of herbal and earthy.
On the nose, for sure.
On the nose.
I feel like I get past the sulfates on that one. That kind of sulfury. For me, it's that sulfury kind of, the very nose. But once you get past it, it's divine.
It not like nicely tart. I like that.
Very tart.
Yeah, very tart.
What I so this is in that semi-sweet category where it's still a lot of sugar.
It's got like that caramelly sugar.
Yeah, it's very
residual, like a lot of residual sugar still there.
Oh, there's a ton of sugar left in this. But that tartness and for me the tannins really balance with the sugar, the residual sugar, and it you can taste that it's sweet.
Right.
But it's not overwhelmingly sweet compared to the other characteristics in it. Everything is still very well balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But those tannins, because I'm doing that trick you guys taught us last time you guys were here, where you use your tongue, roof of your mouth, and like it's like sandpaper. Like it's very much so.
Yeah, tannins are very, very high in this one. Crab apples are typically very tannic. That's very common.
Yeah. I like it. It almost reminds me of like a warhead, like super tart to me.
Yeah.
But what?
Warhead.
Oh, what's a warhead? Oh, like a warhead sour candy. Okay, yeah. Got it.
Yeah, this one, I hesitate to call this one a dessert cider per se, but it's definitely not. This is sort of your after dinner digestif, you know, something you sip on. You pour a small glass of it and sip on it.
Yeah.
And if it's sitting in your hand and it warms up, you know, all the better. It just, with any cider, this is true, but as it warms up at every little temperature change, some new aromatic is being released.
Get out of here, for real.
And so as it warms, you'll get these different layers, if you will, of aroma, And so you can sit there with something, just let it warm up and it'll smell different.
Because that's what I was saying before here. We warm the glass up to pour it. And you said you could can do that. And you guys are saying, and now I'm knowing it's going to bring out more.
Different.
Different. Not much out, more. Different.
It'll bring out different. Well, I mean, in, effectively, so it will be now. More. I'd personally, I prefer to pour it with the glass at room temperature and then just let it warm up in your hands. And
interesting.
Just kind of, you may or may not notice how it changes, but there'll be some small changes. And sometimes you'll notice it, sometimes you won't.
I can see why it's already taste testing through all the various cheeses to find the right pairing.
Right, because you guys...
I don't even want to try it with the blue, but it's tasted well with everything else.
Mm-hmm. But for those who are joining us, we have the... got Bloom, right?
Blue Butter Bloom. Bloom.
Butter Bloom, God. Got the Gouda or Gouda. Uh-huh. We have the blue cheese. We have some Italian fruitcake. And then we have what I've been calling the Frank... What's the Funky Monkey, but it's the Funky Monk.
There right? you go. Exactly. The Belgian rind cheese.
That's why it's favorite, I feel
For
like.
For me, this one has a bold enough flavor profile that the Gouda is just
fantastic
amazing
with the
it.
Gouda, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's with dessert ciders and dessert wines and stuff, in general, it's... You can go either two ways. You can do something to complement the flavor profile of the wine itself, or you can do something that cuts it.
Yeah.
So, like sometimes the blue cheese will kind of cut some of the sharper wines.
It's decent with the blue cheese, but the Gouda was stronger, so strong that it overpowered most of the rest of the cider. The earlier ciders we tried in our last episode.
Okay.
But it goes really, really well with this. This is fantastic. Super, super tart, but very sweet as well. It's like. Like a sour candy. I like it a lot. Yeah, crab apple's fucking weird.
Yeah. But warming the glass up, I tried that. I feel like I get more of a caramel note, like a caramel sweetness to it when it's warmed up. In my hand, I held it for like a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
More of like a caramel sweetness to it. Now that was like
it's like a caramel sour apple kind of thing. Yeah.
And fascinating.
Yeah. So that's cider one.
Jesus, here we go.
One of 18.
Buckle up.
Hang on.
Are we trying an ice cider next?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And strap in, boys. We're in for a trip. We're in for a journey.
When you were talking about ice ciders, I found that super fascinating. In our last episode, I mentioned I grew up on like a small farm. And we had some apple trees. Along with our crab apple tree, our neighbors had like pears and avocados. There are a bunch and just like ridiculous amounts of cherry orchards around us. And all of the fruit growers would always say the best time to harvest is immediately after the first frost. So the first time that everything freezes, like that's the day you want to start harvesting your fruit, specifically apples. They would always mention apples specifically, but they said it was generally universal for like all the fruits. Because they said that the frost would push all the sugars that are like in the tree into the apple. And I was like, yeah, that's doctrine. That makes sense. Sure. And so like, I don't understand, but it makes sense that it, you know, a frozen fruit is going to have the concentrated sugar there, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's fascinating that, you know, just like this little town I grew up in, you know, no one drank cider or beer or anything. It was like a bunch of, you know, LDS people, like all my neighbors. My next door neighbor was my bishop, and the next door neighbor on the other side was his first counselor, right? So it was like very, very like small Mormon community. It wasn't polygamous. Just I should get that out of a small Mormon community. People might jump to conclusion. But small town, and we're like everyone was LDS. But it was always like, you know, harvest after the first freeze. And right. like, it's interesting that we have, you know, these ice ciders that are
it kind of makes
harvested
more sense now.
Frozen, like yeah. it's super interesting. Like, I don't know, I wouldn't have ever put two and two together that makes a sweeter cider, but I knew that would make a sweeter apple, right?
Right.
I think there's probably something there. I've heard this said about, you know, why you do or don't want, you know, vegetables to freeze and things like fruits to freeze. Anytime you freeze something, the water forms ice crystals, and those crystals all have sharp edges on them, and they end up at a microscopic scale, at a molecular scale, they end up breaking cell membranes. Wow. And which allows some of that flavor to come, you know, to spread.
That makes sense.
It breaks things up a little bit more.
Yeah.
I'm not an orchardist. I don't pretend to be an orchardist. So I can't really say whether that's 100, whether that's true, or I could be completely making that up. I don't know. But it sounds right to me.
Yeah, it sounds right to me.
I'm pretty sure I've heard it before. So
that's like sugar. It pushes the sugar from the trunk into the apple. I'm like, sure. Fine. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
absolutely.
Uh-huh.
I'm with you on that one.
doesn't make sense to us.
Matt, what's the one you just poured us?
So the one I just poured is, this is from Eden Cider in Vermont. This is their heirloom blend. This is their flagship ice cider. This is their main one.
Their little baby.
This one has roughly 15 different varietals of apple that go into it.
Whoa.
And then this ages for generally 3 years before it's sold.
Oh, damn.
And then ice ciders, we kind of touched on it, the whole, like, you know, freezing the juice, or whether Eden presses the apples, gets the juice, and then that juice is left outside in northern Vermont and allowed to naturally freeze.
That's awesome.
By rule, I mean, I think it's even law, maybe, that if you're going to label it as an ice cider, you have one of two options. You can either press the apples, set the juice outside, and let it freeze naturally, or you can let your apples freeze and press frozen apples. But you cannot artificially refrigerate and freeze it that way.
And why is that? Do you know why?
I don't know. The
it's awesome.
I mean, it is awesome, but I feel like
there's probably some tradition there. There's
because it goes back to like a Germany purity law, where they have to make it from Germany with their water, their malt, their, you know, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, it's their region.
I mean, this is what I know about cider. I don't know if ice wine is. I'm assuming ice wine's probably the same way. Some of it probably harkens back to tradition.
Okay.
There's probably something about, you know, maintaining equity in sizes of producers.
Okay.
It allows small producers the same. It puts them on the same playing field as a larger producer. There's no worrying about, oh, this person has refrigeration and, you know, can always reliably take care of this and get it to the exact point that they want. I was talking to Eleanor, who started Eden, and, you know, obviously in the beginning she was making the ciders and the ice ciders. They have a cider maker now. And she, I was just talking to her this past week, and she was telling me that, you know, this year's ice cider batch was in real jeopardy. They hadn't had real freezing temperatures yet.
Well,
but just this past week, the temperature finally dropped, and like a snowstorm came in, and it's, you know, it's cold enough that they were able to press it and freeze it. And
So does all of the cider need to freeze? Like, what kind of containers are they putting it in? Because I'm imagining, like, maybe the top freezes and the bottom doesn't freeze all the way, and so some of it's frozen. Yeah.
So it's the top. I mean, what's the water is going to freeze out first.
Yeah, and then you want to.
And so the water is going to be at the top.
Yeah,
and then you're draining what's left for liquid off the bottom of that tank.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. This is very fascinating.
I've heard of freeze distilling, which I imagine is just taking this to another level.
Similar concept.
Yeah. I've heard it's dangerous, though. Like, they're like regular distilling. We just had the distiller from Holy Stone on recently, and he was talking about how you've got your, was it like first runnings and final runnings or something like that?
You have your heads,
your heads,
hearts,
and
your tails.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your heads and your tails are, he said that they're dangerous. Like there's bad alcohols in there that you want to get out. Yeah. Ethanol and stuff like that.
Yep.
But I always heard that, freeze distilling, you can't filter that kind of like those bad alcohols out that like make you go blind and shit like that. And so like higher ABV freeze distilled stuff is no bueno.
Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know much about freeze distilling.
Yeah.
Hmm.
There are no bad alcohols in this, though.
Yeah.
Have no fear.
Well, I mean, like, I'm sure they're there, but to small amounts. Like, maybe if you drank a shit ton of this, you'd get, you know, alcohol poisoning.
You're just going to get alcohol poisoning before anything else catches up with you. So,
not that we're advocating for that. Drink responsibly, folks.
Don't do that.
So this one's 10% ABV.
I like this one a lot.
It pairs with everything, too.
Yeah.
Like,
actually, all of the things. Fruitcake,
right.
Even the fruitcake. Fruitcake and the blue cheese. Like, that's a fucking range, and it pairs with both of them.
Because it's so delicate and can kind of, the cider itself is delicate, or?
I don't know if Maybe delicate's the right word. Yeah, it just seems super versatile. Like it pairs really well with just about everything.
I kind of call them the port wines of the cider world. They're absolutely. So comparing this to the Manchurian crab.
Wow. Yeah.
This is so much sweeter.
Oh yeah.
It's like an apple. I don't want to say an apple syrup, but I mean it's in that vein. I would happily pour some ice cider over, you know, some vanilla ice cream.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Wait, what about ice cider and vanilla ice cream?
Great pairing.
Sure.
Blow your mind.
Yeah. Just change the game right there. Next week on
Ice
Cream Masters. No, but I really like this one. This one was very smooth, but it had that rich sweetness to it. But it wasn't over the top, like 21%, like kind of like rocked you on your socks. It was good. I liked it.
Like apple syrup is close, but it's not like cloying.
No.
It's sweet, but it's delicious. Yeah.
But the nose, I don't know if it's the cheese we have in front of us, but I kept getting like a stinkiness from the
There is a certain aroma in there that I'm.
So it wasn't just me? You guys
I'm working hard to try to figure out what it is. Because it's not.
It was stinkiness. But I couldn't tell if that was the cheese that's in front of us or it was actually the glass.
I just attributed it to the cheese, but I mean.
Or someone's socks. Like, I have no idea. I
don't get a stinkiness necessarily. There's a distinct aroma that.
It could be my glass.
I'm just trying to place. It's a sort of floral, sort of honey-like a little bit.
It's more like the honey range, I feel like. Really sharp honey. Kind of.
This reminds me a lot of the mead. I'm not going to lie. We had a mead guy a couple weeks ago. And that honey wine. This dabbles in the realm of honey wine, right? Like honey sweetness.
Yeah, I think it's just some of the earthiness from that, really.
There's an earthy nature. There's kind of a citrus sense to it a little bit.
It's tasty.
Yeah, it really is good. But now you got ice cream. I'm not an ice cream person, but I think me and the jalapeno, this and ice cream, game over. That's a good.
Little drizzle of this over some
for
ice
sure.
cream.
Yeah, absolutely. And man.
I'm in happy town if that happens.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
I'd put this next to the ice cream. And it would have to be like a homemade vanilla ice cream.
Best served chilled. Is that ironic that it's an iced cider and it has to be best served chilled? Is that just irony or is that?
Just because you want it to have that kind of sweet flavor forward.
That dessert.
Like that cold iced, brings out the.
Gotcha.
Brings out the sweetness, I think, more. So, I mean, we're not totally chilled here, but we're not room temperature either. It's not been sitting out that long. So, so it's kind of more cellar temperature range, I'd say.
I like right this. Now. Eden has yet to steer me wrong.
Like, yeah. We didn't actively like warm this one up, obviously, with our hands in this one.
Thank God.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. See? You guys are blowing my mind. So while we're talking about that, I was going to ask you guys, because you just said that they have to put it outside and let it chill. Is there any worry about wild yeast getting in and infecting the apples, infecting the batch, or making it better?
It's still going to be in a sealed tank.
Okay.
It's probably, I mean, I haven't been present when they've pressed and set everything outside. I'm assuming they do it in a big plastic IBC tote.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sealed. And then, you know, these,
are they pitched yeast or are they done with natural yeast?
These are going to be a pitched yeast.
Okay.
And so with a pitched yeast, most of those have been, isolated and, you know, for that use and concentrated to where they're designed to basically overpower any native yeast that is present.
Okay.
Like,
are cideries ever scared of infections in there? Like, I've never had an infection. Why now we're talking about sour ciders? Is there such thing as a sour cider?
There are. They're generally made. I mean, there's a couple people making ciders that are very much like sour beers.
Gotcha. Like you can put, like, Pediococcus or Lactobacillus, like, a big strain of it, or Brettomyces, and just kind of, like, infect the cider. And
there are a lot of people doing Brett ciders.
And I bet they're just amazing. You sit on them for a couple of years.
Well, I imagine like a Pediococcus or Lactobacillus, like those are kind of natural yeast you're finding on the skin of the apples. So like if you were to ferment.
A native ferment, it'll happen. malolactic fermentation is something that frequently happens in cider towards the tail end. You get your primary fermentation, and then lactobacillus starts taking over, and it kind of some cider makers like it, some don't. It can help to mellow the acidity and the tannins and some of the just some of the flavors.
Yeah.
Can give it a little bit more of a buttery note.
Interesting.
And that's usually an off flavor in beer.
Yeah,
there's a lot of flavor. I mean, and I have no. I try to start sentences, and I keep going in different places in my head. I have a friend who is a reasonably well known beer maker, and he's starting to get into cider, and I've been working with him on that, and we talk about it a lot. And for a little, it took him a little bit of time, not long, but a little bit of time to kind of come to terms that there are certain things in cider that are desired that in beer would be considered a flaw.
Gotcha. Yeah. I can see that.
There's things in cider that we like that winemakers consider a flaw.
Right.
There's things in wine that they consider a flaw. I mean,
fascinating.
That they like, and we would never accept it in a cider. So, I mean, every beverage is a little different. It depends on the direction you want to go with it. One of the things I like to say is every cider maker has their vision for what they want that cider to be. And, having judged it at cider competitions, you sample ciders and you're like, who in their right mind submitted this?
Yeah.
But, it's not my place to judge what they like and don't like.
Yeah.
And, if you don't necessarily run it past enough people, as far as you're concerned, this is an amazing, amazing cider. Yeah.
Or a new style you didn't even know about.
Everyone has a different palate. Like, like there are some things that I like that you don't like, some things that you like that I don't like.
Yeah.
And so, there's a lot of ambiguity when it comes to, palates and taste buds of different people. And I can see how that would affect, like, maybe one cider maker is like, yeah, I like this in my cider, and another cider maker is like, I would never do that.
Right.
But, who's to say one is wrong
one's
over
correct.
The other,
yeah,
right. It's like, what do you enjoy? And
that's
the beauty
behind craft
cidering.
I mean, it's a craft. You're just kind of perfecting that art, and your art's your art.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things when we judge, or when I go to these judging competitions, one of the things that's really stressed is trying to step back from your preferences and say, okay, was it intentional? That which is sometimes it's really hard to tell sometimes. But more importantly, is it a definitive flaw?
Gotcha.
Right.
Is it mousy?
Yeah.
Is it phenolic? Is it, oxidated? Is it trying to identify those things and go from there? Just because the flavor profile isn't necessarily what you like, if you can't identify something being a chemical flaw, it's not necessarily something that you dock them for. Just because you didn't like it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I've tried a lot of ciders that I didn't like at those competitions that, I sample them until I have my opinion made and write things down, and the rest of that goes back with the steward to get dumped out. I've had plenty of ciders at that competition where, that glass isn't leaving the table until it's finished.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
fascinating.
That's more often the case, though.
Right. I imagine. Does an oxidized... What does an oxidized cider taste like? Because in wine, an oxidized wine is going to be more like vinegary, right? In beer, an oxidized beer is going to be more like cardboard. What are you looking for in cider? How do you tell like what
either
oxidation
way,
tastes like?
A little bit of both.
A little bit of both.
It can go either way.
Nice, like vinegar.
More
cardboard.
Often, it's going to be more of a like a wet cardboard. Mm.
Yeah.
No bueno. The vinegar is more the acetic bacteria just. Turning it to the acetic acid starting to work and
right
or creating acetic acid,
yeah,
which is your vinegars and
well, you said last time all apple juice wants to be cider, and then you're like, wait, no, just kidding. All apple juice really wants to be apple cider vinegar, but it likes to make a stop along the way at apple cider, and that's where we like to enjoy it.
Yeah,
apple cider is sort of it when it reaches maturity, and then the vinegar is its old age.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting how, I mean, beer has the same progression. Like, if you let it go too long with, oxidization and fermentation, you'll end up with malt vinegar, right? Mm-hmm. I was going to say something and I forgot what it was because you started pouring cider.
Distraction.
Yeah, distraction. Oh, I was going to ask, are there certain types of cider that you would say an oxidization is preferable? Because there are certain beers where if there's oxidization in a lager, I'm like, get this shit out from under my nose.
Right.
But if, you know, there's like a big barrel-aged stout and it's got some oxidization, I'm like, that's exactly what you want. That's I mean, it's barrel-aged. And so an example I used is in our last episode with you guys on, we had the two Liberty ciders. We had the Raven Oak and the 50, what was, actually, David, what was it?
55 Chain.
55 Chain. What does that mean?
So 55 Chain is the level of how high it is when it comes to.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Yes.
You remembered.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the Raven Oak seemed to
which
have.
It has dead ravens inside of the oak.
It had
arrows.
Dead ravens yeah. in the oak.
Not accurate.
That's not accurate at all. But they had the same like apple base, but they were noticeably different. Yeah. I think the 55 mm-hmm. chain was a little bit more developed. And I think I said on that it seemed more oxidized,
yes,
but I
did.
Didn't mean that in like a detrimental way. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. I think it just seemed more like it seemed more mature, more aged, further along in the process. Whereas the Raven Oak seemed, you know, younger, fresher, a little more spry.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say that, I mean, some things can have some oxidative notes
yeah.
without being oxidized.
Yeah. But that can be a good thing. Like mm-hmm. I'm seeing a cider over here that looks like it's darker. My guess is that it's barrel aged. And would you look for like a oxidative note in that?
I personally, I'm not super sensitive to it. So I really have to work to try to find that mm-hmm. when it's present. I mean, it has to be pretty prevalent for me to notice it. But I probably wouldn't. I wouldn't, I mean, just because it was in a barrel, I wouldn't necessarily look for it.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Whereas like in a barrel-aged beer, that's almost like one of the notes you almost want to find, you look for. You know, that's a descriptor of most barrel-aged beers is like a little oxidized. But
it's preferred. It's preferred in beer and cider and maybe not so much in wine. Yeah. Like,
I have a question for you guys while you sniff this apple juice. what is 35 degrees Brix? What the hell does that mean?
That's the sugar concentration.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Brix is just a measure of sugar.
Gotcha. So they don't use like gravity. They use Brix.
You can use
or Play-Doh.
You can use gravity. You can use specific gravity. Brix is I don't know if Brix is more granulated. I'm not sure. There are other things that can affect the specific gravity of a liquid.
Yeah.
Other than sugar. Brix is a measure of just sugar.
Specifically sugar.
So you use a refractometer.
Yeah.
You put a little bit on there and hold it up to the light.
Right,
and
right.
You'll see the Brix that way.
Interesting. In beer making, they use I think it's the refractometer, same thing, they hold up to the light, and they use that to measure degrees Play-Doh.
Okay.
Whereas this says degrees Brix. Now, I was curious exactly what that was, but degrees Play-Doh is sugar as well. So I wonder why you guys don't like the Greeks, I guess.
I don't know. I really do need to learn Athens. More about the beer making process. So maybe
Brix might be from French. Like I'm French. Totally just guessing here, but in terms of like cider making traditions from the French, that might be where it comes from.
Hmm. It could be.
I'll have to follow up on that.
Straight from Normandy.
Could be.
Could nice. Be. Maybe that's something I do on a Cider Saturday. I come down and talk to you about
yes,
beer
I'll bring
making.
It to the brewery.
That would be super cool.
Mm-hmm. At
cider
the brewery.
Saturday, we should talk about beer.
At the brewery would be really cool.
Next time you guys come on, I think we should do beers. We've done a lot of ciders, and I want to do beers with you now. Like we've stepped into your world for
Step
5
into
episodes.
Into our world.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
I had another question. We talked about this before you guys got here, because David was like, oh, man, ciders with a wild yeast would be wild. that was super dumb. I didn't mean to say that, but like, I feel like ciders with wild yeast kind of seems like a normal thing because you've got the wild yeast on the skin of the apple. And I imagine that that's used to ferment, about as often as it is not. What I think would be super interesting would be like using, you know, specific beer yeast. So you talked about Brettanomyces being used fairly often. What about like a cider with like a lager yeast fermented at a lower temperature, would you get something crisp and clean like you expect in a lager?
I don't know if anybody's used a lager yeast. I've seen there's a lot of Saison ciders. I've had ciders that were made with Belgian yeasts.
Do those get those funky notes? Are you looking for like, you know, banana, clove, bubble gum, that kind of like farmhouse flavors?
Yep. Yep.
Gotcha.
Those yeast typically tend to impart, you know, those same characteristics. Yeah. It's a little trickier. You've got to be a little more on top of things, monitoring how everything is going, really shepherding that fermentation along and watching everything and paying attention to it.
Yeah.
Giving it some temperature when it needs it, dialing it back when it doesn't. It's a fine line when you start getting into the beer yeast is what I've, I haven't done it personally. That's just what, you know, I've been told is that you really have to be careful with it. And it's a little trickier.
Yeah.
Whereas opposed to, you know, a lot of ciders are made with either a champagne yeast or a white wine yeast, which, you know,
probably doesn't impart a lot of flavor.
It can, but a lot of times those are used because they don't.
Yeah.
They don't contribute a lot to it. They let the apple itself shine.
Mm. Right.
Mm-hmm. But wild yeast ciders are pretty tasty too. I mean, there's a good range.
So both the Liberty things that we had today are native ferments.
Nice.
Those were allowed to just ferment naturally.
Oh, sweet. They're really good.
Native ferments have become, I mean, they're still not, I wouldn't call them mainstream. There's still far more pitched yeast than there is native ferments. But native ferments have become a lot more popular, and they're more common now.
Yeah. It seems, I mean, not only easier, but like I just like that idea of like going back to the way like, you know, our ancestors did like thousands of years ago. Like that sounds super cool to me, and I want to see what they were drinking and tasting. And so that's part of the reason I think I like those Liberties and the Colonial as well, is it was like the Colonial said it was a recipe that was 300 years old. Like, hell yeah, I want to try that. That sounds awesome.
So a lot of when you go back that far, they're making their ciders in barrels.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the same chemical cleaners that we have now. Those barrels didn't get cleaned out the same way we maybe would now.
Yeah.
Or they're definitely not getting cleaned out the way we would now.
Right. definitely not as well either.
Yeah. So you end up with these microflora environments in the barrel, and over time you're going to get some yeasts that are more dominant than others, and eventually you're going to have an environment in there that's pretty consistent, and even whatever is present in the juice from the pressing, the environment in the barrel is going to take over. And
yeah,
that's sort of how you get some of the consistency out of traditional ciders in these regions that have a long history of cider making, like France and England. One cidery we went to in, it's hard to call it a cidery. We went to one place in France. It was an orchard, and his barrels that he makes his cider in are over 200 years old.
Whoa.
You know, can you imagine what's living in those barrels at this point? And like the reason his cider is the way it is every year is greatly due to those barrels.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You can rinse it out and everything, but there's going to be a living culture in there.
Yeah.
Residual bugs just chilling right.
There was, we had a couple weeks ago, we had, who was it that was talking about it? Was it our meat guy who was talking about, or no, it was a Holy Stone distiller. He was talking about Ethan, he was talking about in barrels, the reason that there's like charred barrels and you can get that darker color is because like they would reuse barrels from other stuff. So they're like, yeah, this barrel we just used to haul a bunch of fish.
Yeah, gross. You don't want fish in your...
Yeah, and so they would burn it and then
put
a new thing. But it's cool they wouldn't burn it between sessions of cider. And so you can continue to get that same yeast developed. Mm-hmm. The only other like story, I mean, you hear stories about like, George Washington had a porter recipe that he specifically added yeast in. And we asked our brewer friend, like, how the hell did he measure yeast? Where was he getting his yeast? And he was like, you know, I don't know for sure. It doesn't say, but my guess is a lot of guys would brew. And then I think they would, it's called crashing. Correct me if I'm wrong, David, you're the brewer here. But it's like when you crash is when you pull the beer off the yeast, right?
So you pull the beer off the yeast, then crash it.
You pull the beer off the yeast and then crash it.
Because once you crash it, the beer is terminal.
Yeah. They would pull the beer off the yeast, but then they would just take that sludge that was in the bottom and put it in their next batch.
Yeah.
And so that was George Washington adding, because he's like, add 3 cups of yeast. And I was like, how the fuck did he measure three cups of, but he was like using the same yeast over and over. Mm-hmm. I've also, you know, in like Viking lore, whatever, Scandinavian, you know, history, they would dry out that stuff, that yeast in the bottom, and pass it on to their friends and give it as like a part of the dowry. Like, okay, like my daughter is marrying you and, you know, the women make the beer. And so this is, you get our,
have some
our,
dried yeast.
Ooh. Our dried yeast. It was Kvik yeast, which is like the most powerful yeast ever. I don't know about ever, but it's fucking powerful. Because I mean, like it survives in like Norway, which is not like a super survivable place.
Not Florida by any means. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not Florida. There's no gators in Norway.
No.
But they would like pass that
more
on.
Palm trees.
Yeah, right. More palm trees. Not a survivable place. Yeah. People go there to like become really fucking hard.
Not a lot of citrus fruit.
Yeah. But
we could go on and on, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, I don't know. Yeast is super fascinating. Like, I always thought it was like a relatively new thing that we're like using this yeast. But I mean, if it's using the same barrel, then like that's how you get that consistency. It's fucking fascinating.
It is cool.
Somebody was mentioning during CiderCon this week, and I don't remember if it was part of a style. I wish I could recall exactly what the conversation was. But they were talking about making something, getting it fermenting, and then you never pull more than 2/3 of the liquid off before you add more juice to it. And it sort of is this runaway train that carries its own momentum, if you will.
Yeah, like a revolving door of... I've heard of that around the same period, like colonial.
You can pitch one. You can pitch once. You can pitch once and just keep that going.
Yeah,
and it helps with in sense of consistency as well. If you want a consistent product from time after time after time, you know, doing something like that.
Yeah.
Every batch has some of the last batch in it.
Right. That's how I have a sourdough starter. Sourdough starter. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how it is. Like, you know, you pull out a scoop and then you add equal parts flour and water to what was remaining. And so you just feed it. That's exactly what it is, feeding it. But then you use that. Interesting. That'd be cool to have a cider that like every year it's like, yeah, this is just an addition to what we like made last year. Like a sourdough
starter. So you just poured us the Eden Honeycrisp iced cider.
So this is a single varietal. So just the Honeycrisp apple is the only one that's in this.
I had it, but it had a nice tanginess to it. Like that tart tang.
Did you get kind of a honey? You get some honey notes, which is, I mean, that's why the Honeycrisp apple was named the Honeycrisp.
You know what? It was so sweet. I couldn't tell you if it was from the honey or from the apple. I didn't know.
Okay.
To be honest with you. And I paired it with the Gouda. I think the Gouda was really well. And then the, what's that? Butterbloom? We can't even.
Butterbloom.
Thank God. I got it right. Yes. Mm-hmm. The Butterbloom. Yeah. It was good. Well done eating.
No, for sure.
A lot of honey notes too. Yeah.
Right.
So you guys got honey? Because I got like just sweetness. I don't know what I couldn't.
Candied lemon rind, apricot jam, peach marmalade.
Ooh, apricot jam. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah, all those types of things come out.
Above.
Yes.
A, all the above. Or D, all the above. Gotcha. But did you guys try it with the stinky cheese, the blue cheese?
About to right now.
I want to hear what you guys think because I didn't hate it, but fascinating.
I didn't love it with the Gouda. I liked it more with the blue cheese.
Yeah.
The blue cheese is interesting because you get like that super intense, it's almost like a bitterness, but it's not quite from the blue cheese. And I think that has gone fantastic with these two Eden ice ciders. So
for me, it was that tanginess is the word I come. Yeah, tangy.
It was like a super, like ultimate tangy.
Yeah.
Right?
Liked it.
I think it's super good. I liked it more than the Gouda. The Gouda was super good with the crabapple Liberty. Mm-hmm. That's the only one that I've really liked with the Gouda so far.
The blue cheese is my favorite with the ice cider so far.
Yeah. I agree.
Elizabeth,
the blue
cheese
and the Butterbloom, which surprised the shit out of me.
Again, I'm kind of the Wyatt. Like, I like blue cheese by itself, like, with everything.
Nothing
wrong
with that.
I'll put blue cheese on ice cream. I don't care.
Wow. I don't know about
drizzling the ice cider over it.
Yeah.
I would try. I would try blue cheese, vanilla ice cream, and ice cider together. I would give that a try.
I know you would.
It'd be delicious.
It probably would.
It would be
absolutely fascinating.
The ice cider is what would bring that together, though.
So blue cheese and vanilla. The honey crisp with the funky monk.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that was good. Yeah.
Good combo.
Yep.
Get a good funkiness. Had a question for you guys. So I know to be, you know, a wine expert, say you're a sommelier, and then if you're going to be a beer expert, you get a cicerone. Is there a cider expert?
There is. Apollier.
What the hell?
That's my guess. Is that Apollier?
You're close. You're very close.
Pommelier.
Pommelier. Oh, shit. You were, wow.
So apples and pears are palm fruits. Quince is in that as well. And some people are making quince ciders. But the American Cider Association launched their Certified Cider Professional Program maybe 4 years ago. And obviously they started with a level one class. Level one is, you have to do level one before you get to level two, but level one is targeted mostly at bartenders,
servers, yeah,
wait staff who are going to be bringing ciders to you or taking your order and trying to guide you to what you want to you know, get. It's general understanding of cider and the history of it and understanding the characteristics. And then level two is the pommelier. And I'm guessing, I mean, it's still a relatively young program.
Right.
Pommelier just launched 2 years ago. Was when was the first test.
That's relatively new then.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I fully anticipate that there will be like a level three and level four, possibly. And it'll grow just like sommelier and cicerones.
Yeah.
But the pommelier exam is no joke. It's a difficult test. I've passed the written portion. Still working on the tasting portion. They keep changing their format on it. So I took it the very first time it was held, and the pass rate was not high. But it's the first test. I mean, they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
And they ended up modifying the tasting portion, which. You know, the second time I took it is completely different tasting portion. So all of a sudden you have no idea what to expect on that again. And you go through and you're like, well, okay, did what I could. We'll see what happens. Hmm. And
interesting.
Would have been testing this week, but COVID.
Gotcha. So for those who advice for those who want to become, I guess, professional cider taster.
Yeah.
What would you give to those individuals?
I could say find a different hobby, but I don't want to say that. there's a lot of resources on the American Cider Association's website and some study guides. I brought a couple books with me that are referenced in some of their
fascinating.
Their suggested readings, if you will. One is Ciderology by Gabe Cook. Gabe is a cider advocate from England. He has a far better mustache than I do.
Shut up.
It's way
so it's like handlebar-esque.
It's all waxed out and everything.
Waxed out.
Gabe's a great guy. Gabe's a character. Ciderology is a fantastic book that talks about a bunch of different individual cider makers, events, regions, how ciders differ between countries. Different ways that ciders are produced and whatnot. Sort of in that same vein is Tasting Cider, which is from the magazine Cidercraft.
Oh, cool.
So Erin James is the editor at Cidercraft. She put out this Tasting Cider book. The first half of it talks a lot about different styles of cider, specific cider makers. Getting us, there's one right here, the sense of place. Terroir is a thing in cider.
Okay.
When we do the single varietal thing, you'll kind of get some of that.
Yeah.
If you have a Macintosh apple from Montana and one from Washington, some of that difference is just going to be the growing environment that it's in.
Interesting. Cannot wait. Oh, my God. Why? I just pulled a picture of the Gabe, English guy, and he is.
The ciderologist.
I just want to be his friend right now.
He's an amazing person. He also has his own podcast.
He has his own podcast.
Yeah.
Neutral Cider Hotel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yeah. Shout out to that.
Yeah.
So this Tasting Cider book, also in the back, there is a whole section of cider cocktails.
Okay.
Wow.
And then just some cider cooking recipes. And
man, cooking with cider. I need to start doing
that.
Ways to
pair it.
I've been doing the cider mimosas, mm-hmm. and those are, okay, I think I'm going to do that from now on. I'm not kidding.
Right?
Cider
mimosas. It's a
mimosas.
Good way to go. Oh. And then this is a relatively new book. This only came out in the last year or so.
Holy Bible, James, King James Version.
Steve Jones and Adam Lindsley from up in Portland. Steve owned a cheese shop and they wrote a book, Cheese, Beer, Wine, and Cider.
Oh, hell yeah.
And so it is.
Yes.
It's 75 pairings. It's 25 pairings of cheese with beer, 25 with wine, 25 with cider.
That's super cool. Oh, you brought that last time, I believe. Yeah. A couple. Of,
yeah, like, we never got
17 episodes ago. Yeah.
There's some. So this is a great, and they break out the ciders by, you know, by style. It's like English semi-dry, English dry, single varietal.
Man, there's so much in there.
Breton ciders, Norman ciders from France, method Champenois ciders, sparkling Spanish, still Spanish.
What's that Spanish you call it? Cidre?
Cidra?
Cidra? They have Cidra? That in there? Cidras?
Yeah. Still Cidra, yeah. barrel, you know, fruity ciders, hopped ciders, barrel-aged ciders.
Stop.
So the general and what...
God.
I could. How about I read the book to you? Chapter one.
It was a cold winter's night.
kind of at the end of the book, their general guidance is cider is the easiest to pair with.
Okay.
The oh my God pairings happened more with beer and wine than with cider. But the dear God never give that to me again pairings happened with beer and cider. Or beer and wine. Beer and cider. Beer and wine for both of those. The highs.
That makes sense.
The highest highs and the lowest lows were pairing cheeses with beer and wine.
Gotcha.
That middle range where it was just consistently good.
Just sexy cider.
Cider.
Gotcha. Versatility.
Kind of. Ciders that they said, I like that. You know, if you want to do an evening where you're pairing beverages with cheese,
yeah,
their general consensus was choose cider and it'll be hard to go wrong.
I like that because I sometimes go home and I'm like I just want a pilsner or a lager or a pilsner, like something lighter. And sometimes I'm like I want something hoppy and I want something darker. And I go in the fridge, and I'm like, God damn it, I got something different, right? But I always got a cider, just like I could do the cider, yeah, because cider's like you're right. I think it's
So it can be neutral,
yeah. But now that's a bad thing.
It can be, right.
Fantastic. I
mean, specifically, they're talking about just pairing. They're pairing it with cheese.
Man, I can pair it with everything.
But, yeah.
That blows my mind. Blows my mind. What's the next one you have for us, brother?
So next one, that first Eden we had is their heirloom.
Flagship run, right?
Their heirloom. Mm-hmm. This is their heirloom aged in brandy barrels.
Why is fist bumping so hard right now? You guess. Oh, yeah. Man, you guys just spoil us every time. But yeah, I'm with Wyatt. You guys got to come on and drink beer one time.
Yep. We can. I don't know if we can drink as much beer as we make you drink as much cider.
Oh, I'm going to make you drink that much beer.
As Matthew always likes to say, he likes beer, but beer doesn't like him very much. So
we can change that.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. So is Eden one of your favorite cideries of all time?
It's hard. It's one of those cideries. It's hard to go wrong. They are one of my clients, and they're a client that I sought out because...
And Eleanor is her name, correct?
Yep. Oh,
wow.
Eleanor is fantastic. Just...
Why I got that nose.
Nice things about Eleanor.
That's She's awesome.
Whip
That's
smart. Fantastic. Makes cool. incredible products. Just a wonderful, wonderful person.
Bring her to Utah.
She's on board as soon as this COVID thing is.
As soon as travel gets freed up. We'll definitely be doing some sort of Eden event.
Yes. Like a special dinner.
Yes. Definitely. We'll bring in a bunch of different ciders. Eleanor will come out, have her talk about things. And we'll set that up. I'd like to do more of that. It's, you know, that would have been going on this past year had we not had what we, you know. Had.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great times.
Oh, great pandemic times. Man. But we've used the time wisely to expand our
power. Yes, you guys have. Absolutely.
No, you have, I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, we have too. I mean, we're trying to anyway. Trying to keep busy.
So six months in American oak barrels. Some of the apple varieties that are in this. Roxbury Russet, Hudson's Golden Gem, Esopus Spitzenberg, McIntosh, Empire, Rhode Island Greening, Lamb Abbey Pearmain, Black Oxford, Blue Pearmain.
Damn.
Winesap, Ashmead's Kernel.
Never heard of half of those apples ever.
Those are not apples you're going to find in your grocery store, but.
Fantastic. I love the nose. I can sit here and just keep smelling it.
Yeah.
This is definitely one of those ciders that you want as a candle.
Mm-hmm.
Or as a cider.
Holy
or
shit.
Or as an accompaniment for my cheese.
Yeah. And fruitcake. It was
that
super
was
good.
Way more sweet than I thought it'd be. Yeah, I was expecting to put like brandy in my mouth.
Fruitcake and blue cheese is good with both of them. What about fruitcake and blue cheese?
Oh my God.
I'm with you.
And some vanilla ice cream.
See? That is a bona fide dessert.
This is incredible.
You guys want to pause this? We'll get some Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah, we'll go.
I think we'd have to have, you know, what it's Magleby's, right? Is the Orem. Yeah. So we'd have to stay local.
Or we just keep recording the whole way there.
I'm okay with that.
However, Ben and Jerry are like neighbors of Eleanor and Eden in Vermont. So
she's so spoiled. Kind of,
it's true.
Yeah.
If you're going to put Eden ice cider over an ice cream, Ben and Jerry's is probably your best bet for that. Just,
I'm totally going to do that.
They are neighbors.
Ice cider and ice cream. That's the next thing I do.
I'm surprised there isn't a, you know, Eden Ben and Jerry's flavor.
Yet.
Not maybe yet. We can make that happen. I love that weird collab flavors. Idea.
You may have to,
We have friends at both places. So, yes.
Well, I have a friend that was a, he was one of the ice cream makers at Ben and Jerry's.
Nice.
No, I got fired.
No, he left willingly.
To make ice cream with other
by
people.
By choice, but his last flavor that he did was the Colbert's Americone.
I was going to guess that. I'm not shitting. The Americone?
Yeah. Yep.
That's insane.
That was his last flavor that he created. He has a picture of himself with Stephen Colbert at the launch of the ice cream. Mm. But, you know, I could talk to him to get to the right people at Ben and Jerry's, I'm sure. Go. Get them talking to Eleanor and Garrett, the cider maker up at Eden. I'm sure they'd all be down for some collaboration something. Probably. For me, this particular cider, I get there's a nutty note to it that just really works with the nuts and the
orange
cake.
I like the orange and the fruit cake, yeah.
As well.
You're right.
They're just fantastic together.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It makes it almost like a winter spiced cider.
Yes. Yes.
Ooh, I like that. I think this is my favorite one so far because of the just that barreled that note. I love that.
Yeah. Like smoke almost.
Yeah. It was really good. Wow.
See, David's hesitating to pick a favorite because there's like 17 more in front of him.
Yeah, so far.
The Manchurian crabapple still stands out to me as phenomenal.
That one does stand out. Yeah, you're right. Wow. Interesting. So, you guys
going
are...
in for blue cheese.
Blue cheese?
Blue cheese was super good with
good
it.
Good for you guys.
Yeah.
Have at it. Now I got to know before I ask this question. Oh, Matt is rolling his eyes. Wow. Fantastic.
Wait, good roll in his eyes or bad roll in his eyes?
I can die happy.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
Whew. I was going to ask you guys, have you ever seen turmeric in ciders?
Yeah.
I have.
I feel like turmeric's like the new thing right now, turmeric, and as cliche as it sounds, apple cider vinegar.
But
turmeric's like the thing.
Mountain West just did, they still have it out. Sweet Alice.
Sweet Alice is turmeric.
Sweet Alice is turmeric and peaches.
Gotcha. What do you guys think? Yay, nay, turmeric?
Yeah.
For me, turmeric is just, it's very similar to ginger. They're very, very similar to my palate.
Gotcha.
And personally, I would take ginger over turmeric just because ginger has more of a bite to it. That's just my personal preference, but I mean, Alice is delicious.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very easy to drink.
Hmm.
I know I've had several other ciders with turmeric in it.
I don't know if Treehorn's done one or not.
I don't know if
Treehorn's done. Don't mention Treehorn ever again on this podcast until you can bring him to Utah.
Has Stem done a,
No, I know. I don't want to speak out of turn because I don't want to mess anything up, like in terms of,
right. But
who's done it, but I think it's. Herbal ciders definitely have a lot of innovation and people playing with different things.
Gotcha.
So, like, I think, like, if you're going to go with something like turmeric, go all in. Like, get the bite, like, especially the really bitey ginger.
Okay.
Like,
that's cool.
Go all the way. Don't just dabble in it.
I think we talked about this last time, but we're talking about, is there CBD ciders out there? Because that's kind of like, you've been seeing a lot of beers lately with CBD going in it. Mm-hmm. I think it's a gimmick. Mm-hmm. I really do. But have we seen CBD ciders lately?
I haven't seen a cider with it.
Hmm. That could be interesting. I mean, again, people are messing with it right now.
Right.
And just seeing, I don't know, it's becoming a fad right now.
There's some cideries I have in mind that it wouldn't shock me if they've experimented with it.
Because I know the dry hopping's been awesome. Love the dry hopping. I want to see different hops in different ciders. That'd be really cool.
There's some cideries I have in mind that, you know, probably quietly have experimented with THC and
I wouldn't doubt that.
Cider.
Yeah.
Again, not legal.
Not legal.
but experimentation. It's all there.
They experiment at home on their own time.
So speaking of home, have you guys ever homebrewed cider?
Yes. For me personally, it's now I'm gonna get picky. Mm-hmm. Because cider's fermented and it's not brewed.
Oh, David.
So I understand, like, and I catch myself on it because, you know, homebrewing is a term and,
right,
you know, home fermenting just doesn't roll off
the tongue. Doesn't sound sexy. Yeah.
Making cider at home just is kind of a, yeah, it's like, okay, well, that's what it is, but it's kind of a longer sentence.
So how would you phrase that?
Make cider. I just make cider at home.
Do you have, like,
I've made my own cider.
You have your own carboys and stuff? Like, you guys do it regularly?
I haven't done it in a while. I had a space to do it in, and we tore out a big chunk of our basement, and we're in the process of refinishing it and going to make a big
pool house.
Yes.
Yeah.
I need the pool in my world.
There was going to be a big great room, but with a kind of have a kitchenette a little bit in it, and we were going to put in a giant sink, and I'd have like space to do all my cider making stuff. And we just haven't gotten around to finishing that room out yet. So I don't really have a place to make my cider. I'm sure I could get by with the space I have. I probably just need to do it.
So what's your advice, you guys, your advice for those who want to make cider at home?
You know, it can be as difficult or as simple as you want to make it. You know, you in autumn, you can go buy the jugs of, you know, sweet cider, just going to say apple cider. I call it juice and not cider, but I get juice from Big B's out of Colorado. You can get their juice at Whole Foods in Utah. I've had gallons of their juice in the fridge that just spontaneously started fermenting.
Here we go.
Nice.
And I didn't pitch any yeast. I didn't tend to it. The only thing I tended to was loosening that cap a little bit because that bottle was about to blow up. And you could look at it and see the bubbles rising in it.
Interesting.
So you can go as simple as just, and that was in the refrigerator.
Buying juice and forget about it.
Normally you let it sit out at, you know, at a room temperature and it definitely will go on its own. It's unusual to see it go in the refrigerator, but this one did. So you can go the simple route. And for a lot of, there are a lot of kids who grew up and the first alcohol they had was a hard cider because they grew up near apple orchards and, you know, their older brother was like, go get a jug of that juice and put it under the stairs and wait That's a month right. and go back and drink it. You know, corrupted by their older brother, but, it's a very common story I hear from a lot of people that grew up in apple regions. It can be that simple, or if you want to go all in and, you know, get things to measure the bricks, measure the pH, the acidity, and monitor things through the process, control the temperature, the fermentation, all of those steps. You can do that as well. You can pitch your own yeast. You can co-ferment. I know of people that, you know, they dice up a bunch of strawberries and throw them in the carboy.
Ooh, and ballsy.
Co-ferment with strawberries in there or other fruit, peaches.
Yeah.
You know,
I did plums with mine, but that was just because I had a couple apple plums trees and a plum tree.
In your backyard, yeah, right?
Yeah, that sounds delicious.
Sure.
It was fantastic.
I bet it was. It sounds.
I left a bunch of the skins on the plums to try to get some tannin in there. It was pretty, ended up pretty interesting. I actually still have a couple bottles of it.
Nice.
Tasty.
You know, you can do that. You could ferment it. And, you know, when you go to bottle, throw some fresh plum juice in that bottle and back sweeten it with the juice a little bit. The one risk, and I'd say I've never homebrewed. I've never made beer myself, so I don't necessarily completely understand the process. But with cider, a lot of people, so you can, if you keep it cold enough, generally you can keep the yeast dormant and prevent it from fermenting further.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to, you can cold crash and try to stop, arrest the fermentation to retain some sugar in there if you want. It's much, much easier to just let the fermentation go all the way through until it's completely dry and then, you know, add something back to it to sweeten it. But typically there's still going to be some yeast in that bottle. So there's always a risk of it fermenting in the bottle. And you could blow bottles up that way.
Oh, fun.
Not like violent explosions, but I mean, they'll break and pop.
Make a mess. Yeah.
Make a mess. A lot of people when they, you know, and there's calculations to look up for it, but they'll put a little bit of priming sugar in the bottle and that's how they naturally carbonate it. You know that there's yeast left over in there. So it'll consume that and add just enough CO2 to make it a little bit bubbly in the bottle.
Right.
But yeah, you can absolutely do it. There are kits that you can order to do it, which will just come with apple concentrate and dump in the concentrate, add water, and it will make cider.
Let's go, Wyatt. Let's go make some cider.
Okay.
Again, together. Here on Tastemaster Cider Makers.
My experiments have taught me that, you know, there is an art to it that I haven't reached the experience level to reach quite yet. I've had some that came out great and some that, you know, maybe not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's like that with home brewing and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you can absolutely make cider in your basement.
I like that. It's good information.
We'll go get some Big B's. You said it was Trader Joe's?
Whole Foods has it. In the autumn. I don't know if they still have it right now. Maybe.
Right. But even locally, you know, we brought you some Riley's Orchards, fresh juice, not pasteurized. Like that's, you just want to start with quality juice if you can.
The higher quality juice you start with, the better you're going to be. You definitely want, you know, what we in America would call cider because it's all unfiltered and it's just fresh juice.
Yeah.
If you go in and get Welch's apple juice, you know, when you look at the ingredients on that, more than 50% of that stuff is grape juice in the background. And
whoa.
Yeah.
And it's already been pasteurized too.
You can still ferment pasteurized juice. You're just, it's not, maybe not your results.
Take a little bit of that sourdough start I've gotten.
Results may vary.
Right.
Wouldn't it be gluten-free at that point,
though? Oh, thank God.
Come on now. That's a perk of ciders, that they are gluten-free.
Yeah, they are. That's good. That's a lot of friends who don't like craft beer. I can give them ciders and be like, hey, it's gluten-free. And they're usually, the reason they can't have craft beer is because of the gluten. And I feel bad. And I mean, you can make beers without gluten. Mm-hmm. But
like, whoa, cider's gluten-free? Like, yeah, it's apples.
But everyone has liked it so far. Fascinating. Awesome.
I've talked to several brewers that, you know, they've made gluten-free beers.
Yeah, they're like, you use sorghum. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorghum. And they're like, honestly, I'd still rather have a cider.
Yeah.
They're like, it's just, you know, yeah, I can make it. And if you're dead set on drinking beer,
right,
because you want to drink beer,
yeah,
sure, we can make you a gluten-free beer, but
I get it. I understand it.
You probably are going to enjoy cider more.
There's way more you can do with cider than you can do with gluten-free wheat, you know. But Matt, what else do you have for us?
Right. I have one more ice cider, and this one comes from Eves Cidery. Eves is located in the Finger Lakes region in New York.
Okay. I'm excited for this one. I don't know
why. This one is, again,
a deep, rich, dark color probably has been taunting you.
Yeah, it just looks, I don't know, not scary, but
we're doing tiny pours on this one. I got to make sure it goes all the way around.
You know what I know about the Finger Lakes region of New York? That it's easy to get lost there. And that's all. I don't even know why. It's easy to get lost there.
You've never been there?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. I don't know that I've gotten lost there before, so I'm not sure.
I can't say I've ever been there at all before. Soon, when travel resumes.
Mm-hmm. Is it finger laking good?
Oh, it might be.
It's a Wyatt joke for you right there.
Papa Wyatt.
Papa Wyatt joke.
Papa Wyatt dad joke.
Thanks, guys.
Wow. See, I get like dates on the nose. So I'm sorry for telling you that, but.
No, almost absolutely.
Like I get Fruit Loops on the nose.
Screw you, man.
No, but I do get like, I opened
absolutely
up.
Dates.
Okay. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Dates, raisin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Open a box of raisinettes that aren't dancing. Yeah.
Whoa.
On the nose, it's a little bit like the Colonial.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been nothing added to this. This is just apple juice.
Tastes like
naturally concentrated.
Mm. Tastes like raisin juice to me. I can't get that. I don't even know. And this comes from the Finger, you said from New York, Finger Lakes, New York.
Yeah, yep. Upstate New York. Yeah.
Interesting.
Which is, it's a wine region too.
Let's say Van Etten.
Mm-hmm.
is where Keith Cider is.
Hmm. Yeah, small little orchard, total heirloom apples. I've been there, Matthew Hassan, actually. So I've actually seen the operation. Yeah.
The Butterbloom cheese, though, ridiculous.
Decent.
That's probably my favorite pairing today so far.
Butterbloom.
Oh, I put, here we go.
We can fix it.
We have
got a whole plate full of cheese.
The power. Again, thank you, Liberty Heights Fresh, for.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for going to Liberty Heights.
Any day. So, culinary adventure there.
Thank you, Liberty Heights, for steering us in the right direction.
I don't know. I'm kind of going fruitcake with this
one. The fruitcake's bomb. Compliments really well.
I can totally see that. Actually, you know, sometime after you listen to this, you can go on to YouTube, and just this last year for the Finger Lakes Cider Festival or Cider Week, Eve Cidery did like an orchard tour, and that it's like a maybe a half hour, like 20-minute, 30-minute thing on YouTube that you can watch and tour the orchard, kind of get a sense of
I'm down.
Their general philosophy about the environment, nature, growing apples, cider.
Nice.
Now, Eve's is usually wild ferments for their other bottles, right? So I don't know if Icetera is or not.
I like this a lot.
Pull up on that one.
This one is fascinating. I like this one. Thanks for sharing that one with us.
I get a lot of chocolate in it.
Do you really?
Yeah. Like both on the nose and the flavor. Chocolate and like dates and raisins for sure, but
I can definitely get
like chocolate.
That chocolate note.
Yeah. And something like almost reminiscent of like espresso. Not quite there, but like almost like a little bit of coffee there.
Mm-hmm.
Almost. What is that coming from? Is it like chocolate apples?
Chocolate apples. I love that.
Chocolate. I mean, I don't know if this one's barrel aged.
I'm not sure if this one's barrel aged or not.
I just assumed it was based on the color.
It might be. I'll double check on that for you guys. And
yeah,
I have to say this one's been sitting in our cellar for a bit too. So
this one's
kinda...
this one has sat for a while. Obviously, we're at the very tail end of that bottle,
right?
Yeah.
But that's also, I mean, that's sort of the cool thing with I'll say wines in general, but I mean, what cider falls into is you can make them out of one fruit and get all of these other fruit flavors out of it.
Yeah.
And where's it come from? I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
I mean, you know, for everything we know about plants and nature and how things work, there's probably 100 things we don't know. And
Yeah, you're right.
That's the truth.
Maybe the plants talk. Maybe they share secrets.
They collaborate. They're like, don't tell them.
I'm okay with that.
Maybe I've had too much cider.
Maybe you have.
All right, Matt, we have time for one more cider.
Oh, boy.
And I want you to choose the best one. There's like 15 left, and I want you to choose the best one. I know it's irony at its best, but.
I knew where it was going with this one.
We're going to have to finish this bottle off.
This one's called the Tauntaun. What was this one called?
This is
from the Landcorn Endor.
Maison Tauntaun.
See, I was close.
Maison Tauntaun from France. This is a bottle that we brought back in the summer of 2019.
Holy shit.
This is a bottle of Pommeau. So in France, and we didn't really get a chance to touch on it, so maybe another episode we talk about Calvados.
God damn it. Yeah, it's the one I wanted to
talk
about.
Well, we can talk about a little now, because it is from the Calvados area region.
This one comes from the Calvados region. Calvados is a region just like you can only call a sparkling wine champagne if it comes from the Champagne region. Mm-hmm. You can only call an apple brandy Calvados if it comes from the Calvados region.
Both in France.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pompous.
They like to protect their AOCs.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
That's so thank dark. You.
There's you.
I don't even know.
It's a brandy, so barrel aged. I mean, it's effectively a brandy, right?
So for Calvados, there are rules about how many. Not going to have any for Elizabeth.
That's fine.
I'll share with you if you want.
There are rules in Calvados for how many, you know, how long it has to stay in the barrel. There's a minimum amount of time. And then you can label it this, that, or something else based on those. There's so many definitions for that. You know, there it's Calvados. Apple brandy is a generic name for it. In America, we frequently call it Applejack.
I love Applejacks. Great cereal. Fantastic.
If you say this tastes like Fruit Loops, not Applejacks, I'm going to come over there and slap you myself.
So, Pomo, when you go over to France and you tour around, most of the orchards are making they're growing their apples to make Calvados.
Okay.
And then they have cider as well. They have cidre. And then a lot of them will also have Pomo, which I've had some people tell me that it's a blend. It's Calvados blended with either fresh apple juice or cider.
Okay.
I've had some people tell me it has to be apple juice. But then when we were in France, we had people telling us, no, we blend this with cider.
Okay.
So, either way, it's a little bit more of it's a little bit more mellow than Calvados. This is still 17% ABV.
Oh, get wrecked.
Pomo is, I've had some very delicious Calvados. For me, it's got to be pretty old. It's got to age for a while to mellow out. The younger stuff is just a little too harsh for me. But Pomos are kind of more where I love to live. Okay. I mean, I know I say I love dry ciders, but this is anything but dry. And Pomos are just, I mean, I fall in love with them.
Okay.
Absolutely right. Love them.
Salut.
Salut. That nose is just pretty. I feel like pinky's out when I smell this. You know what I mean? Yeah, thank you, Wyatt. Pinky's out.
French ciders very frequently have that barnyard wet horse, aroma.
Mm-hmm.
And this one has it pretty noticeably.
Like wet horse nailed it on the head. Like this horse needs to rest for a couple of days. It's worn out.
And I don't know. It's weird how those are the descriptions we come up with, and you drink it and you're like, that's exactly what I love. That's the flavor profile. Like I love, but at the same time, licking a wet horse is not going to get you that flavor profile. I'm assuming. Maybe I'm missing out on things. I don't know.
Maybe.
Gone off the rails.
That was a way more smooth than I thought it'd be. I expected just like, for some reason, I expected brandy and just kind of that,
more of a burn feeling.
Rail that tongue, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This one's blended with cider.
Mm-hmm.
And I should add that, cider in France, is made, and we'll have a whole episode on this too, probably.
I'm down.
On the French Cider Masters.
Cider Masters.
So they make their cider through a process called keeving. And in the end, what it does is it results in a naturally sweeter, it results in a cider that's generally lower. It's lower ABV, but has a lot more residual sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And their ciders have a very sweet profile to them frequently. So when I say that they added cider to the brandy, it was a pretty sweet cider. So probably maybe not quite as sweet as the juice, but pretty close. It's still a sweet blend.
I like this a lot.
Brandy.
Wyatt, what are you getting on this one? I got to hear it. Sorry, mid bite. My bad, buddy.
I don't know, Fruit Loops, maybe.
Come on, then smack you.
No, like a lot of caramel, and kind of some of those barnyardy flavors. Like horse blanket that you wouldn't expect to taste good, but tastes delicious.
It's that rich earth.
Yeah,
flavor.
Like rich, like earthy, kind of like rainy days. Mm-hmm. Flavors almost.
Mm-hmm. That's a good example. I mean, that's a good explanation because
it's a good descriptor. It's a good, rainy day is one of those descriptors that we should dive into.
What does it actually mean? Like, who actually knows?
That's a definition that only you would have. That everybody, we can all say nutmeg, and we all have a pretty good sense of what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Rainy day, we have to start digging into, We know you grew up on a farm.
Yeah.
So rainy days on a farm are going to bring out aromas that you wouldn't get on a rainy day in the city. So then you start talking about, okay, wet hay.
Yeah. Yeah. Earthy.
Mud. Damp. Some dampness. I
mean, you're going to get like mud. Like
you're going
to
get a mud. Did you guys have cows?
Yeah, we had cattle and horses.
Cattle and horses.
So like, you know, chickens, dogs, goats, sheep, you know, sure, all the farm stuff.
But you, I mean, living around that, when it rains, the cattle and horses are getting wet.
Yeah.
And so those are going to be aromas that are in the air on a rainy day.
Yeah.
So when you say it smells like a rainy day, like those are some of the things that have influenced what a rainy day smells like in your mind.
Right. So like when I think of a rainy day, it's like dirty and clean at the same time. So it's dirty because, you know, all of the animals are getting wet, and you've smelled a wet dog. Wet horses smell different, but I wouldn't necessarily say better. cattle are the same way. They smell a little different, but not necessarily better. I think maybe a little bit better because, like, I think a lot of it comes down to what they eat. Like, you know, hay smells great and dog food doesn't smell great. And so you get a lot of like that kind of wet hay flavor. But then like, and everything's muddy and it's all going to be dirty, but it also feels like clean. It's like cleansing. Because, I don't know, there's something about that, like the water running down, like, you know, like your horses and cattle could be dirty, and when it's done, they smell weird, but they're cleaner. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I think of like rainy day. It's like both clean and kind of dirty at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is just such a dichotomy, but that's kind of what I'm tasting in this.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah.
I can.
Well, and it's kind of.
I'm starting to get like, the more you talk, the more I get a sense for what it is you're getting out of it and yeah, where that's coming from.
Mm-hmm. And caramel.
Caramel. I get some notes of leather.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, that's another thing, I guess. As soon as you say that, I'm like, yeah, like we had so many things made out. I mean, like you got saddles for an example. Mm-hmm. And like when you first said wet horse, my thought of wet horse is like, cool, I just finished like, you know, working cattle, or, you know, my buddies and I went on a ride. We were roping, we were training horses, something like that. And horses sweat like a motherfucker.
Yep.
And so you pull the saddle off and there's like, you know, mm-hmm. right where the saddle blanket was, it's all like matted hair and soaking wet. And so like I can see the leather because, you know, saddles are made primarily mm-hmm. of leather. You know, I used a type of bridle called a bosal, which was made from rawhide and leather.
Okay.
And it had a very like distinct smell, and I can kind of get that as well.
And normally you'll hear people describe it as wet horse blanket.
Yeah. I would say like tack horse. Room almost.
So wet mm-hmm. horse yeah, blanket.
Yeah. That, tack room's
yeah.
yeah. Mm-hmm. Like dusty tack room right. a little bit.
When
there,
you're getting
sure.
all the different smells of the different leathers and oils and
oh, yeah.
different
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
flavors. And I just think it's interesting, like this, or just Northern France in general, the farm culture there is a little bit different than what we have here in the States. And like the cows are grazing underneath the apple trees. So their manure goes back to the apple trees.
So the tree, directly. The apples that fall feed the cows.
Mm-hmm.
And then that passes through the cows and the cows feed the trees.
Yeah.
And it's this symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
The trees there are very tall. All the branches are trimmed up so the cows can't just reach up and pull apples off. But
I rate.
It's just cows grazing underneath underneath apple trees.
It's just
trees.
A difference of richness in the soil that's different, really.
Interesting.
When I was in high school, I had a pretty big sheep herd. My buddy and I bought like probably 40 or 50 head of sheep together. Just like on a whim. Like you can buy day-old lambs for really cheap. And it was like, we found a guy who was selling day-old lambs for like $10. And I had a nanny goat, and nanny goats are notoriously great mothers. And so we bought like six lambs and put them on the nanny goat, and she raised them, and then we would just keep buying lambs, and
so cute.
We would like feed them out of baby bottles too, which mm-hmm. is super cute. But when they got bigger, we had a friend who had an apple orchard, and we ranged them in there. Like range is wrong, pastured them in there, and eventually we had to take them out because they were like straight up climbing trees and stealing all the apples. But it made me think of that. Mm-hmm. And you were like, yeah, the apple trees are taller. I was like, the apple trees I experienced were not taller. those damn sheep were like we would drive
bushes.
By and they would be like all of them would be crowded underneath a tree, and there would be like ewes like 6 feet off the ground that had like walked up like angled branches, because like apple trees don't always grow straight up. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. They get weird angles on the branches, and pretty early on in any of the branches like that, they were like up there eating leaves and apples. And he was like, dude, you got to get your sheep out of here. Damn it.
Thanks for joining this episode of Farm Masters.
Of Sheep Masters.
God. But for reals, you guys have been such great regular guests. I mean, you've lost your specialness, but you're regular guests and you've been awesome. You guys have taught Wyatt and I so much. I mean, I've learned a shit ton. I'm sitting here in awe. I could sit here for hours and hours and hours talking to you guys. You guys have continued to educate. You guys continue to blow my mind. And there's, I feel like I know a lot about cider now, but I still don't know enough. You know what I mean? So that's why we got to bring you guys on.
I feel like that just goes on forever.
Yeah.
There's always something new to learn. Like,
you got to surrender the fact that you don't know everything. You know, when knowledge increases, behavior changes. That's just what it is. And my behavior towards cider is I'm so down to try ciders. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, cider, I'm a craft beer I make beer. No, that's not my take anymore. And I'm always pushing, ciders for friends. I'm pushing ciders, even my own brewery. Like, I'm just pushing ciders. So, Matt, Elizabeth, thank you so much for sharing the time, taking the time out of your weekend.
Hey, you're very welcome.
Thank you, guys.
Your awesome cellar.
Thank you for having
with us. Of course. You guys can come on anytime. You'll be regular guests, though. Just keep that in mind.
You're not special.
So. Yeah, you're not special anymore. Yeah. But, it's I can't wait to see what you guys have in the works. I know you guys are under, you guys are doing a lot of things. Keep doing what you're doing. If there's anything we can do to help, let us know. We want to push this out there for you.
Thank you.
We are fangirling for you. We support you guys no matter what. Matt, still have a man crush on you, so let me know if you want to hang out sometime.
Dude, anytime.
We'll hang out, beer it out, or cider it out.
Anytime.
COVID safe.
COVID safe, yeah. Masks and everything.
But anytime.
But is there anything you guys would like us to do for you guys in retrospect?
Hey, keep doing what you guys are doing, talking the whole industry, and everybody keeps supporting each other. And that's what, we've seen happen since we were first on the episodes we did initially. So
we should try to get you with our distiller friends and just somehow.
You're meeting all these different people, and you're kind of getting a sense for everybody, I feel like. And I feel like at some point you need to start doing the Tastemasters remix and decide that, maybe you have me and either a particular brewmaster or a distiller on, and we come together.
Talk about their product and your product.
Talk about our products together and maybe how they could work together.
That's
a really
good idea.
Let's find an ice cream maker.
An ice cream maker, God damn it. Bring the Ben & Jerry's guy.
We could get boozy cupcakes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she would love to talk to you guys. Yeah. She would just die.
And we know her too. We've met her. We know Sweet Bono.
Diaz.
Yep.
There's all kinds of ways you guys could go with this.
Fantastic.
You guys are already doing it.
You're
doing what we need, and that's just keeping the conversation going.
Good.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. We're trying. I think
you've seen that, like you said with your whole, when knowledge changes behavior, or when knowledge increases behavior changes. Yeah. And I think that with cider, especially, that's one of those categories that there's a lot of misinformation
Lot
of misconceptions.
For sure.
And I think it could be really fun to sit,
I'm making it happen.
I like beer. I like spirits, but I can still be blown away by a really good one. And I think that it's, for me, I know that I've sat down in front of distillers and brewmasters, poured them a little bit of cider, and you just watch their eyes light up. And so to sit together with people like that and have that all go on organically.
I have some good episode ideas. You're making the wheels turn right now. I love this.
We can do it. Make it happen.
I'm bringing you guys on. There's going to be some trilogies going on here. Tell you what. But
Beverage
why,
Remix Masters.
I like
next.
That. Yeah. Why is there anything you have for us today?
Yeah. I'll let you guys make the best nachos.
Oh, yeah. You know I'm going to make some for Super Bowl.
Oh, man. I don't even like the Super Bowl, but I'm going to come hang out with you guys.
A lot of this cheese may go into it.
Yeah, right.
Damn.
I think I've got a Tacos al Pastor meat for my nachos for tomorrow.
Ooh. Damn.
Oh, I feel bad for anyone who's not watching the Super Bowl at my house.
Jesus Christ. Right?
Well, there's only just the two of us.
Well,
so.
Matt's not going to be there. So
yeah, exactly. Matt won't even watch it. Okay, we're cutting that part out.
No, but again, guys, we do appreciate you coming down and cannot wait until the next episode. But it'll be soon, I promise.
Oh,
all right,
we
guys.
Can't wait. We appreciate it. Thanks,
guys.
We'll start working on the, we'll start building up the cellar.
Yeah, I'm down.
Okay.
And if we can contribute, let us know. All right, to the next beverage, guys.
Cheers.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram at @the_tastemasters, on Twitter at The Tastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_audio.